Better. I'm now going to catch up with Rob Beale, managing partner of Morris Owen. Rob, hope you're well.
Yeah, good, thank you. Yourself?
Yeah, very well, thank you. It's the spring statement has just been announced. So it's the spring statement, not the budget. Previously, it's been the budget. So that's where we should start our discussion this month, if you don't mind. First question to you, though, is why is it the statement? What's the difference between statement and a budget?
So a budget is technically a fiscal event, i.e., it's talking about changes to tax rates, changes to amounts that the government is going to raise going forwards, and also in terms of changes to tax on other products, for example, petrol or wines or things like that. The spring statement is more a should be more a factual commentary on the government spending plans off the back of the OBR reviewing those spending plans and how they fit together. So technically, today was not a fiscal event, i.e., about tax. It was more the government just setting out its plans as to how it goes forward.
Okay, that's unusual, isn't it? Because I think most years there's been a budget in March, hasn't there?
Yeah, traditionally it's been the budget in March, but then we had budgets in October, and we used to have an autumn statement and the budget in March, and then they changed it around. But Labour, when they got to power, said they would have one budget a year, i.e., a tax year, if you like, and that happened in the autumn. Therefore, this was meant to be just a statement today in terms of what's going on.
Okay, good. Well, thanks for clearing that up. So let's just run through the highlights, really. I guess the lead thing perhaps to talk about is growth. So growth has been downgraded, hasn't it, from 2% to 1%, although improved over the next few years to still stay under 2% a year, though. So I mean, what's your take on that? Is that a positive for the Chancellor?
I guess the issue is twofold. One is it's so contingent upon what happens in the global economy that trying to predict the future 1, 2, 3 years out becomes more and more impossible. And the further out you go, the less likely it is to be correct. So I think that's the first thing. I think the second thing is, and anyone that's been in business has seen people do this before. It's very easy for me to show you a graph that says it's not very good today, but it's all going to come wonderful in 3 years' time. The old hockey stick graph.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I guess the reality is, if you look at what commentators are saying for the budget 25, they're suggesting more taxes are going to have to be increased. The growth forecast from November last year, only sort of 4 or 5 months down the line, has been significantly reduced. I'm not sure how much credibility there is in the figures going forwards.
Indeed, yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah, I mean, and yeah, we there's the argument, of course, about the global events. Clearly, what's happening in America has had a knock on, and people are worried about prices. We'll come on to inflation in a moment. So probably not a surprise about this year's growth, but I do think, yeah, I mean, as you not to kind of almost contradict what you were saying, it would be good to see some good growth forecasts coming forward, but yeah, let's have some reality rather than just say it's going to be 10% growth in 5 years' time. Yeah.
If it happens, I think we're all welcome it. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. So inflation, it did come down, didn't it? But it's forecasted to be higher now, 3.2% this year than
Yep.
was previously forecast at 2.6. Just remind us, Rob, about inflation and the danger of it, please.
So the issue with inflation is the fact that it eats into the real value of money. It means that you've got to earn more in order to stand still. And the risk is that you then have to earn more to stand still. That in turn creates inflation. And you go into this cycle where actually it's not improving the economy. We're not seeing real growth. We're seeing growth in numbers, but actually purchasing power is being reduced.
Yeah. And as we've talked before, some inflation's good. We need to see some level of inflation, and probably the target of 2% is a good target. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it is. I think what if you get into it technically, there's two elements fundamentally that make up inflation. There's the movements in things that for example, oil prices go up and down, and therefore that impacts on inflation. But you've then got the fundamental underlying inflation, which is linked, for example, to wage inflation. That's actually more stubborn, and that's really what causes the bigger concerns, is that more strategic inflation that underlies it all. That's what the Bank of England are trying to really bring down.
Okay. And of course, coming forwards in the new financial year is quite a lot more costs, aren't there? Things that have been in the budget previously. So yeah. I suspect inflation is probably going to spike, is it? Do you think over the next 2-3 months we'll probably see a spike?
I think it depends how these increases start to ripple through. So we've got increases to national insurance, we've got increases to national minimum wage, which linked to the national insurance will show certain businesses really starting to struggle with their staffing costs. That may or may not be passed off in full or in part in terms of price rises. And that's the type of inflation that needs to be brought out of the system.
Okay. I guess that's good. Thanks for that. Spending rules. So I think she's maintaining her spending rules, hasn't she? And the argument was that if certain circumstances hadn't occurred, they would have been in the situation they forecast. That sounds a bit sort of like spin, doesn't it? But just remind us on the spending rules and the importance of that and the impact potentially of that.
Well, fundamentally, what the Chancellor is saying is that by the end of the economic cycle, the government will be spending less than it brings in income, and therefore debt will no longer be growing. And actually debt, therefore, as a percentage of the gross domestic product of the country starts to fall. And she said, OK, with these further adjustments that I've put through, we've now got headroom of sort of 10 billion or whatever the figure is. But if you think about 10 billion in terms of the size of UK PLC, which is sort of 1.4 trillion or something, it's such a thin margin. It's not going to take much to blow it off course.
No.
And in my experience of life, with the exception probably of there was a time when George Osborne was the Chancellor where we had a sensible, proper level of headroom. You know, this is really thin, and we've almost got to be monitoring it on a month-by-month basis because, you know, things could change so quickly.
Yeah, indeed. Well, let's have a look at some of those things that are going to contribute to that surplus. First off, the additional spending. The only thing that I picked up in terms of additional spending is going to be on defence, which was well publicised. We probably don't need to really talk much about that. Donald Trump's told everybody they've got to do it. Kind of everybody's fallen in line. And to be fair, people probably do accept that we have under-resourced defence, and we, you know, we have been subsidised by America, and maybe we shouldn't have been. So no surprise there, is there?
No, I don't think so.
So in terms of savings, cuts to welfare, that's slightly counterintuitive for a Labour government to do that, isn't it? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and I guess it's one of those ones that at the time that the current government has the large majority it has, it can get away with it because people within the Labour Party who don't agree with it are probably in a minority, and therefore it won't have an impact. I guess the question is, as time starts to go forward and if by-elections start to go against the government or whatever the case is, then that becomes a trickier sell. But as you say, in terms of what's been announced, it was more like listening to a Conservative Chancellor than listening to a Labour Chancellor.
Very much so. I guess the undertone is get people working, which is good. And if, well, you know, there it's very much a Tory trait, isn't it, to reduce benefits to try and get people to work. But yeah, we all know the positives of working, the purpose it gives people, and it does help well-being. And it is very, very important to the country, isn't it, that we do become more productive.
Yeah, and I think the difficulty with all of these things is for people that can work, yes, they should be working and they should be contributing as opposed to taking from the state. The difficulty is it's a blunt tool, and therefore the concern is that people that do need help and do need support will be the ones that suffer. And, you know, in a compassionate society, should we be in a position that people are suffering to that degree? And time will tell as to whether they've got it right or whether we're actually there is a backlash because it's too broad brush.
It's a tricky balance, yeah, absolutely. And then aligned to that, I guess, is the public sector savings. The projected savings are $6 billion, and the prediction is about 10,000 jobs to be lost from the public sector. So that's that kind of intimates that there's a fair bit of fat there, I guess.
Yes, but if I guess you ask anyone that uses any public service whether they think there's fat there and the service is brilliant and it can be trimmed down and made more efficient and at the same time improved, I suspect most people will be questioning how that's going to happen.
Yeah.
The government says that it's going to put a lot of money into AI and technology in order to improve productivity within the civil service, and to some degree you can see how that may well work. I'm afraid I'm fairly cynical about it, and I think if you look at the existing quality of some of the services that we cope with and then say there's going to be a reduction in the staffing behind it, my fear is that we're not going to see an improvement in the short term.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And finally, the other thing I just picked out was 170,000 houses being built over the next 5 years, which should add 0.2% to the growth of the economy. Well documented. That really, well, the interesting thing there is that talking to people in the public sector, that they want to advance planning so that they can get these houses built. But cutting back on the public sector could already damage a process that's already strained. So
yeah, I mean, I think if you talk to most property developers, they will tell you that the planning system is broken and has been broken for a good period of time. And the problems with the planning sector is one of the main reasons as to why the amount of houses hasn't hit targets. And therefore, to some degree, if there is going to be a sea change of the planning system to open it up to allow people to get on and grow, and build houses, then as a country, that's a good thing. No doubt individually and in certain areas, people will be saying, yeah, that's fine, but not in my backyard. Thank you very much. I guess the only counterpoint to it is in order to build the houses, there's got to be people prepared to buy them. And if interest rates aren't coming down and unemployment is going up because people are being moved redundant, etc., etc., is there going to be the demand?
Indeed. That's great. Thanks very much for that, Rob. I think we've discussed the, well, I was going to say autumn statement because that's what it normally is, but the spring statement very well there. Stay with us and we'll talk about how the general feel in the economy is. Thanks very much.
Thanks.